Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week, meditation instructor Marcus Casey continues our series of talks on the lives of the Karmapas, based on the books History of the Karmapas and The Karmapas and Their Mahamudra Forefathers. How do we relate to teachers? What kind of response should we have to our teachers' requests? Join us as we look at the lives of Gampopa and the first Karmapa and discover the ways they met their teachers and how much that guided their lives and practice. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Thank you for coming. Great to see you all here. I know there's a retreat going on, and we have several members in Yellow Springs for a retreat this morning, but thank you for joining us. My name is Marcus Casey. I'm a volunteer meditation instructor, and I fill in when Lama Kathy and Lama Tom are away and unable to be here. We often have to share them, and this week we're sharing Lama Kathy with our retreat over at Yellow Springs. So Lama Kathy has asked the meditation instructors to help out from time to time when she's away. And we usually go through a book and do a book study while they're gone. And we're doing something kind of new this time. The book that we're just beginning is called The History of the Karmapas. And so we're going through the Karmapas one at a time, and we're kind of mixing that in with some other books too, so it won't be all this book all the time. There will be a mix. So it's a very fascinating book, and I really enjoyed preparing for it. It has historical facts and dates and place names, things like that, but above all that, it really is a set of spiritual biographies, and really fascinating, very inspirational. And we're going to jump right in. I know Eric already started out by covering some of the early Indian masters of our lineage, Tilopa, Naropa, and I think Marpa and Milarepa as well. So we are going to kind of pick that up and get some context for where we are, and then go right on into Gampopa and the first Karmapa. For anyone who's new, looking for the image, do we have an image of His Holiness anywhere? Little one? Oh, sorry about that. Aha, right here, yeah. Little picture of His Holiness, the 17th Karmapa, and you're going to get some context and some background on that. His Holiness Karmapa is the head of our lineage and has been for 900 years and continues to do the work that was started 900 years ago. So we're going to go back 900 years and pick up there. So at the beginning, we usually say the four-line refuge prayer at the beginning of our talks. The prayer is in Tibetan, so for anyone who doesn't know it, you can just feel free to listen and follow along. Just make the aspiration that to awaken and to help others to awaken. When we're chanting this, we're repeating our commitment to take refuge in the three jewels, the Buddha, or what we aspire to, the Dharma, which is the path, and the Sangha, or the guides and companions on the path. We'll chant the refuge prayer three times. Om Sangye Chidang Sogyi Chognam La Changchu Bardu Dagni Gapsu Chi Dagi jin so ki pe su nang ki
Jola Pinchir Sangje Juparsho Sangje Chidan Soki Chonamla Changchu Bardu Daini Kapsu Chi Dagi Jin Soki Pe Sunamgi Drola Pinchir Sangje Duparsho Sangje Chidang Soki Chonamla Jangchu Bardu Dagni Kapsu Chi Tagi Jin Soki Pe Sunamgi Drola Pinchir Sangje Duparsho.
So first I want to set the stage a little bit about the time period we're talking about in Tibet. In the 9th century Tibet, Buddhism had spread to Tibet from India a couple hundred years earlier. But then a very powerful king took over by the name of Langdharma, and he basically wiped out Buddhism in Tibet. And it had only been there a little while, and it wasn't firmly rooted enough. He was able to just wipe it out. So then 200 years later, beginning in the 11th century, Buddhism was reborn in Tibet, mainly by the master Atisha, who traveled to Tibet and brought the teachings from India and started a school called the Kadampa School of Buddhism. And there were other teachers who were key factors in bringing those teachings to Tibet from India. One of them was Marpa. Now, Marpa made three long, arduous journeys to India and studied with Naropa, the abbot of the principal monastery in India called Nalanda. And we know him as Marpa the Translator, because he had two qualities. Number one, he had the qualities that enabled him to be a translator. And number two, he actually had the realization necessary to translate such difficult concepts. So Marpa began to translate the teachings from India into Tibetan and helped them firmly root themselves in Tibet. So I'll keep going back to this so we can refer to it. So the first master was an Indian yogi named Tilopa, and then Naropa, who was Marpa's teacher, who gave the teachings to Marpa, who brought them to Tibet. And then Marpa transmitted these teachings to his main disciple, Milarepa, who became one of the most well-known masters in all of Tibet. His story is very fascinating. I'll go over it really briefly, but basically, Milarepa's mother felt she had been wronged by some family members, and she sent him to study black magic. And he proved very adept at that and used it to cause a tide of destruction, which actually killed many people. And he came to regret his actions and realize the enormous weight of the negative karma that he had created during his adolescence. So he sought a teacher and was eventually sent to Marpa. Marpa saw that Milarepa first had to purify himself of all this negative karma. And so Marpa, before he would take him on and actually teach him the teachings, he made him go through a whole series of tests that were extreme hardships. He had to build a tower out of rocks to Marpa's exact specifications, and when he would finally get it built, then Marpa would tell him to tear it down again, and these type things over and over. And finally, then, Marpa gave Milarepa full transmission of all the Mahamudra teachings from Naropa and the other Indian masters. Milarepa practiced these teachings for many years in mountain retreats and attained enlightenment. He gained fame for his incredible perseverance in meditation and for his spontaneous songs of realization. Many of these have been translated into English. You can pick it up. It's called The 100,000 Songs of Milarepa. And then Milarepa conferred transmissions to his most remarkable student, Gampopa. So we'll pick up now. That's kind of a summary of where we've come from now. Tilopa, Naropa, Marpa, Milarepa, and now Gampopa. So Gampopa had actually been prophesied by the Buddha. I won't go through them, but there are sutras listed here in this book that show the sutras that actually refer to Gampopa. So he's an extremely important master. He was raised a doctor. His father was a doctor in Tibetan medicine, and he was taught Tibetan medicine from his father. At the age of 22, he married the daughter of a clan chief and had two children, but an epidemic came along and killed first his children and then his wife. And his wife made him promise on her deathbed that he would take monastic vows and dedicate himself entirely to the teachings of the Buddha. So he became a monk and rapidly became an exemplary master. But he still retained some dissatisfaction. He felt that there was more. So basically, Gampopa studied these Kadampa teachings, the teachings that had been brought by Atisha. But then one day he heard the name Jetsun Milarepa. He heard of Milarepa, and he was immediately filled with spontaneous, intense devotion simply on hearing his name. So he immediately set out to find Milarepa, who at that time was in the area around Mount Everest. And their first encounter is actually a pretty famous story. When Gampopa arrived, he saw Milarepa and offered him some gold. And Milarepa said, "Gold and the old man don't agree. Use it as your provisions for practice." And Milarepa had some beer in a skull cup, and he offered the remains of it to Gampopa and told him to drink it. And Gampopa thought to himself, "I'm a monk. I'm not allowed to have alcohol. And there are many attendants around here who would see it." And Milarepa said, "Don't think so much. Just drink." And so Gampopa thought, "The guru knows best." So he drank the beer. And Milarepa realized then that Gampopa would be a lineage holder and a worthy vessel for all the oral instructions. So in the years that followed, Gampopa received the teachings and initiations from Milarepa and became his main disciple. In 1121, after having meditated in a cave Gampopa had a monastery constructed after he spent some years in meditation. And it would later become a major center for the Kagyu lineage. He built it on a rocky outcropping, and the neighboring caves then would be meditation centers and hermitages for advanced practitioners. He's reputed to have had a large number of disciples, about 51,000 monks and 500 yogis, many of whom attained very high levels of realization. So I mentioned the monks and the yogis, the monastery and the caves, as a way to illustrate a very important fact about Gampopa and the huge impact he has had on our lineage. So Gampopa brought with him the scholarly study of Buddhism, the philosophy, the practices, the deity practices, things like that, that he learned in the Kadampa universities. But he also had as his main teacher Milarepa, the Mahamudra master, the yogi, the mystic. And Gampopa brought those two together and married those, and that to this day continues to be the defining characteristic of our lineage, that we really do have both the sutra and tantra teachings of the Buddha, and as well as the Mahamudra teachings. So, around this time, Dusun Kempa was born. Now, Dusun Kempa, I'll refer to him as Dusun Kempa today, but we know him mostly as the first Karmapa. But at this time, he wasn't called the first Karmapa. So I'll just call him Dusun Kempa throughout this talk. His name means the knower of the three times. And the three times, for those who aren't familiar, pretty simply are past, present, and future. Dusun Kempa was born in 1110 and died in 1193. So this is all 12th century. His parents were Buddhist, fervent Buddhists who instilled the tradition into him. And they witnessed early signs of him having been a great master in previous lives. When he was barely 11 years old, he had frequent visions of deities, including the protector Palden Lamo, who revealed an exceptional destiny for him. It is said that he once left handprints and footprints in a rock as easily as cutting through butter. Now, there may be some members of our community that get a little uncomfortable when we start talking about some of these miracles and things like that. Others, no problem at all. If they do cause you cognitive dissonance, understand that you can set them aside. If it's difficult for you, you don't have to worry about it. Let it go, put it aside if it doesn't work for you, and if it actually is a stumbling block to your practice. I personally have never seen any miracles performed by any of our teachers. However, there are people in our community, possibly even here, who have seen directly, firsthand, miracles performed by our teachers. So these are trustworthy people, and they have no reason to embellish a story. The present Karmapa, the 17th Karmapa, is also said to have left handprints in rock on numerous occasions. And he's been asked about this and about things like this, and he's commented on the exceptional things that he's reported to be able to perform as a Karmapa. And he said, "You can call it supernatural powers. I believe whatever power is there is the power of Dharma. It is due to this that all my predecessors did many unusual things, such as leaving hand or footprints in stone. People say there are many things I can do, but for anyone who practices the teachings, these things might happen." So back to Dusun Kempa. When he was a teenager, he fell in love with a young woman and was brokenhearted when she left him for someone else. He then decided to become a monk. So actually, I've been thinking about this ever since I read it, how big things in history and in the history of our lineage can hinge on small decisions. And, you know, where would we be if he had not been heartbroken 900 years ago? So now he's the leader of this amazing lineage, and he's been reborn again and again intentionally for 900 years. Dusun Kempa was ordained at the age of 16 and he had a vision of the Buddha presenting him with a black hat, which he later replicated as the first material hat associated with the Karmapas. If you look at any images of the Karmapas in Tanka paintings, like the refuge tree or something like that, you will see the Karmapas are represented by the black hat. And that's an example of the black crown that we're talking about. In addition, there are photographs of the recent Karmapas wearing the black crown. And especially the 16th Karmapa would tour the United States and often do the black crown ceremony in various parts of the United States and Europe. And it is said that anyone who witnesses the Karmapa wearing the black crown will soon be enlightened. So when he was 19, Dusun Kempa continued his religious education by traveling to central Tibet, where the teachings had been firmly established. There were big universities and monasteries in central Tibet. Students from all the provinces would gather in central Tibet, and they would seek out teachers according to their reputation or specific knowledge. The teachers in those days, and even on into more modern Tibet, really were the rock stars, the celebrities of their time. Students would move from monastery to monastery for months or years to learn or deepen their knowledge of different topics. Subjects could include monastic rules, metaphysics, epistemology, and philosophy related to different schools of thought. And then having assimilated these texts, they would go look for other teachers who could transmit the initiations related to Tantra. And they usually sought out a teacher with whom they had a direct affinity. So Dusun Kempa started out in the Kadampa tradition. And when he was around 30, he wanted to receive the teachings of the Kagyu lineage. Very similarly to when Gampopa first heard about Milarepa, Dusun Kempa felt intense devotion the first time he heard the name of Gampopa. And by this time, Gampopa had already received the teachings from Milarepa and had established monasteries, so he went to see Gampopa and joined his monastery. So Gampopa is around 60 years old at this time, and Dusun Kempa is around 30. Gampopa's monastery was said to be a model, an example of discipline and erudition, and to be accepted within its walls was a great honor. According to the strict monastic rules, whoever infringed upon the rules risked expulsion. So that's the context for this next story, which is very interesting. Dusun Kempa and two other monks from Kham. Kham is an area in eastern Tibet, and people from Kham have a reputation among Tibetans for being pretty rebellious, scoundrel-type people. So they're kind of an infamous group of people. So Dusun Kempa and these two other monks from Kham wanted to perform a ritual offering to celebrate the Day of the Dakinis. But this particular ceremony involved offering food and alcohol. And of course, as was mentioned earlier, monks are prohibited from drinking alcohol. So this book says, on the outer level, these friends obeyed the monastic code. But on an inner level, they had perfect mastery over the two phases of Vajrayana meditation and were thus empowered to use certain skillful means accessible only to accomplished practitioners. So they received permission from Gampopa to do this ritual, but they had to go outside the walls of the monastery to do it. So they went out into the streets outside the walls of the monastery, and there are stories about how they performed many miracles in preparation for this ritual and the gathering of all the items they needed for the ritual. And in the evening, the three of them performed the ritual, and experiences of bliss inflamed their minds. They offered songs and dancing and invoked blessings of the lineage masters. Once back inside the monastery, this is probably their big mistake, they continued to sing and dance. The master of discipline heard them and came up, running up, shouting, "How dare you? You have broken the monastic code," and told them they had to be out before morning. So, shortly before dawn, the three friends left the monastery and didn't even have time to prostrate before Gampopa and ask his permission to leave. But Gampopa that night had had a vision of the great miracles taking place in the streets outside the monastery. So in the morning, he sent out a servant to figure out what had happened. And the servant went out and saw the three yogis going down the valley, as well as all the birds chirping louder than usual and also going down the valley. Even the tips of the trees seemed to bow down to the valley. When informed of these occurrences, Gampopa declared that the disciplined master had been unable to perceive the great realization that these great yogis had. And he went himself down to search for them. He waved to them, sang to them, and left imprints of his staff and his feet in the rock. Gampopa recognized Dusun Kempa as an exceptional being who would spread Buddhism throughout Tibet. He added that he would be liberated in this lifetime from the cycle of samsara. So Gampopa transmitted all the teachings now of the Kadampa tradition, the classical scholastic studies known as the gradual path or the Lam Rim, to Dusun Kempa. Speaking of that gradual path and Lam Rim, Gampopa is the author of our Lam Rim text called The Jewel Ornament of Liberation, and that can be found translated in English. So Gampopa transmitted all of these teachings then to Dusun Kempa, the first Karmapa. And these teachings emphasize the development of both renunciation and altruism. And they are now an educational constant in our lineage. Then Gampopa gave Dusun Kempa the transmission of the tantras. He then urged Dusun Kempa to go into retreat to actualize what had been transmitted. So he did so, and after only 9 days, Dusun Kempa experienced a strong feeling of warmth and bliss. He removed his monk's robes and began to dress as a yogi. He meditated for 9 months, concentrating in particular on calm abiding, or shamatha meditation, which is, by the way, the very first type of meditation, the type we teach in our intro to meditation class. He did that for 9 months, and then once he had perfected shamatha, he continued his retreat for 3 more years and perfected his meditative capacities on the understanding of the nature of mind through vipassana practice. Gampopa then conferred on him the ultimate instructions of the Kagyu lineage. From then on, the life of Dusun Kempa was divided between retreat and travel. He traveled throughout central Tibet, spreading the teachings. Excuse me. Gampopa encouraged him to go on retreat in a specific location in eastern Tibet. He prophesied that in this location, Dusun Kempa would attain complete enlightenment. In 1153, Gampopa passed away. When Dusun Kempa learned of his master's death, he clutched a garment that had belonged to Gampopa, made supplications, and wept. His devotion toward Gampopa was such that he saw the face of Gampopa drawn in the sky. So Dusun Kempa decided to go to eastern Tibet, where Gampopa told him to go. He went into retreat, and according to the book, he devoted his nights to the practice of dream yoga. He realized non-differentiation between night and day, dream and the waking state, meditation and daily life. When he was 50 years old, he attained ultimate enlightenment. His name is Dusun Kempa, knower of the three times, and that then took on all of its meaning, indicating omniscience, one of the aspects of ultimate realization. At the moment of his enlightenment, remember, when he was young, he had had an image, when he was first initiated as a monk, he had had an image of the Buddha giving him a black hat, the black crown. When he attained enlightenment, at the moment of his enlightenment, he had the vision of Dakinis bringing him that crown, woven out of their own hair, and they put it on his head in recognition of his accomplishment. It is said that beings with high levels of realization, when they see the Karmapa, that's actually what they see. They actually see it on his head. But the fifth Karmapa received a replica of the crown, and that is the one that is used in the black crown ceremonies now. So Dusun Kempa, his reputation grew, and he set out to teach, and he taught tirelessly. Monks and lay people requested him to teach, so he began founding monasteries, and he even began settling disputes between kingdoms. When he was nearly 80, Dusun Kempa returned to central Tibet and established Serpu Monastery. So, Dusun Kempa made many predictions regarding his successor. He wrote a letter giving instructions for where people would find his successor, his future incarnation. And that set a precedent. And kind of unique among the Karmapa lineage is this predictive letter that they give to their close disciples to help them find the next Karmapa. The tradition of a master being intentionally reborn is one that we may have heard of. His Holiness the Dalai Lama is the 14th Dalai Lama. He's the head of the Gelugpa tradition, and until recently was also the political head of the Tibetans. And there are many other reincarnated masters. This really started with Dusun Kempa. Dusun Kempa, before he died, announced his intention to do this and left predictions telling where to find his successor. Because His Holiness the Karmapa established this practice and does these predictive letters, the Karmapa is often called on to help recognize reincarnated masters or tukus from even from other lineages. And this is a service that he provides. So 3 months before his death, a number of unusual rainbows occurred and mild earthquakes hit the area around Serpu Monastery. Dusun Kempa transmitted his last testament to his principal disciples and entrusted his texts and reliquaries to him. After giving his final teaching to his disciples, he sat in a meditation posture, focused on the sky, and entered meditative absorption. After his breathing stopped, he manifested the state of tukdom, the ultimate meditation at the time of death. This state reveals the level of realizations of the master. Although the vital functions no longer play their role, the body retains its suppleness. The region of the heart stays warm, the head does not drop, and no typical order of decomposition occurs. Although the mind of the master has entered into the ultimate sphere of all phenomena, it keeps a link with the body. This state can last from many hours to many days. there is actually an account. His Holiness the 16th Karmapa died in a Chicago hospital. And they had given the doctors and nurses and the hospital staff specific instructions to not touch the body for several days until they said it was okay, not to take him to the morgue, put him in a freezer, things like that. So there's actually an account from one of the doctors that examined His Holiness the 16th Karmapa's body during this time and attests to the warmth of the heart and the lack of decomposition during this time. So just an interesting little tidbit. It's a fascinating practice. I know it's also not unique to Buddhism. I've heard of similar practices in Hindu traditions. So the Karmapa has manifested as a great bodhisattva in numerous other lives, but it is only since Dusun Kimpa that these emanations have been known by the name Karmapa. We call the lineage the Golden Rosary, or the Golden Mala. Each master confers on the next the entire range of transmissions of the lineage in their original purity in order to maintain it as a living and authentic lineage. Thus, each new lineage holder becomes a new head, a new bead in the mala. The first was the primordial Buddha, Vajradhara, then Talopa, Naropa, Marpa, Milarepa, Gampopa, and then finally the first Karmapa, who became the seventh bead in the golden mala, and then the second Karmapa, third Karmapa, and so forth. So that brings us to the 17th Karmapa. And normally I wouldn't jump so far ahead in the book, but there was some very, very interesting news this week from His Holiness Karmapa. So back when the 16th Karmapa died, I won't go into all of the details, but there was a controversy and a splitting of his main disciples, his heart sons. They could not find the prediction letter. They didn't know if there was one. And it went on for several years. They had not found this prediction letter. And then Taisitu Rinpoche opened a locket that he had not ever opened before, and he found the prediction letter inside. And from that, they were able to find His Holiness the 17th Karmapa. However, one of his disciples disagreed that this was the Karmapa. So he found and enthroned another small child as the 17th Karmapa. And it caused a big rift in the Karmakaju lineage. The majority of the monks and monasteries and things like that went with the one that Taisitu Rinpoche chose, the one that established our centers and we are associated with. But a smaller group went with the other Karmapa. And it has caused a lot of division over the entire time that the current Karmapa has been the Karmapa. The reason I bring all that up, because it's actually a fairly difficult subject, the reason I bring all that up is that secretly this week or last week, the two Karmapas met together for the first time ever, and they spent 3 days together and issued a joint statement about their intention to bring unity to the Karmakaju lineage. And it was really a fascinating and beautiful display of unity. And so I bring that up just because it's really, really exciting with all of the controversy that's been swirling around them all their lives. It is really wonderful to see. In addition, the 17th Karmapa has always had a very difficult time traveling. So he was reborn in Tibet, in a Tibet that was under the control of China. And so he grew up in Serpu Monastery after he was recognized as the Karmapa. He lived in Serpu Monastery until he was 14 years old. And over the turn of the millennium, literally in the over January 1st in 2000, when he was 14, he escaped secretly from China over the Himalayas and to India. And he was able then to meet up with his masters and get the training that he was looking for and meet up with His Holiness the Dalai Lama. So having established himself then in India, he actually found that his status as a refugee meant that he was completely at the will of the Indian government as to when he could travel. And for years was not able to leave India and was finally able to start traveling and has made a few trips to the United States. The most recent one, he actually stayed. He just stayed. He stayed for I think more than a year or at least a year. He said he was in bad health and was receiving medical treatment. So he's been living in New York, near our monastery for basically the last year. Just in the last couple weeks, it was announced that he was able to receive a passport from a small Caribbean nation. I even forgot which one it was. So he now has the ability to travel, and I'm assuming that may have led to this meeting of him with the other Karmapa, because they met in France. So now he has much more ability, or the 17th Karmapa now has much more ability to travel, and led to this. So you will see as we study the other Karmapas, the political is not far from these Karmapas. They are such important figures in Tibet that there always ends up being political stuff swirling around them. I think when we talk about the second Karmapa, we're talking about Kublai Khan in Mongolia and things like that. So very, very interesting. I hope I did this justice. This is a very different kind of talk for me. Instead of talking just about Dharma, it's relating these spiritual biographies. But I found them very interesting, very accessible, and fascinating and inspirational. So with that, I will open it up for any questions anyone might have about this or any topic. If you ask about this topic, I may have to refer to the book if it's about history, but about any topic, the microphone is open. Well, why don't we do just a short meditation? Oh, we have a question. Okay. Thank you, Tim.
This morning I was talking with a couple new people here, and you mentioned the lineage, and I wanted to relate to them and others this quote that we have on the front of our brochure by Milarepa. And it says the most profound teaching in Buddhism is to practice. So I got a lot out of picking up on that advice, and hope that others will benefit as well.
Absolutely. And Milarepa was known for his diligence and his practice. There's a funny story. In case you haven't, In case you didn't gather it from some of the stories we've told so far, some of these yogis were really, what's the word? They were characters. They honored the teachings, but at the same time, they didn't let the teachings become a stumbling block. So, or the structure around the religiosity of it become a stumbling block. So, another story, a story about Milarepa, is a story about one of Milarepa's disciples asking how he can attain the realizations that Milarepa has. And Milarepa turned around and lifted up his robe and showed him the calluses on his rear end from sitting and meditating so long that he had developed serious calluses on his rear. So that's the kind of diligence and devotion that that Milarepa had for practice. Yes, Yi.
Yes, sorry. Yeah, I wanted to just say something about the two Karmapas meeting. I was very delighted and shocked, actually, that it would ever happen, because the divide seemed to be such a, I don't know, painful thing. So I was really happy to hear, and I was really surprised. I don't know what else to say about it, but really happy that.
Right.
That the. I mean, I guess I always felt kind of embarrassed as a Buddhist saying that, well, you guys are supposed to be very peaceful, but somehow you guys are divided. What's that? But also, I always knew that the 17th Karmapa had these. I know he's really ultimately patient, and he also has a really, I guess, deep wisdom, but I never thought I would see this ever happen.
It was exciting, wasn't it? And the example they are setting for all the rest of us and all of the monks and the monasteries and the divisions and the bad blood coming together, hopefully will bring great healing. But it really did come out of the blue. I mean, just out of the blue, there was a statement published, and I saw it on Facebook or Twitter or somewhere. And totally out of the blue this week. Very exciting. Thank you, Yi. I would mention too, if the subject of lineage is new to you, we cycle through the same 9 classes, I believe it is, every 2 months in our Intro to Buddhism class at this hour, the 11:30 to 12:30 hour upstairs. And one of those talks is about lineage. And we'll can give more of a insight into the importance of lineage and things like that. I continue to marvel that we are talking about Dusun Kempa from the 12th century, the first Karmapa. Meanwhile, the 16th Karmapa has come to Columbus, Ohio. The 17th Karmapa has spent significant amounts of time in the United States, as did the 16th Karmapa, and is available, and many of us in this room have gone to see him speak. The great good fortune that we have to have access to this master is really unbelievable. I'll tell a funny story that was passed on from one of the translators that translates for some of our teachers as well as for His Holiness when His Holiness is in the country. So His Holiness was going through a museum in New York City, a museum that has a lot of Buddhist and Tibetan artifacts. And at one point, they showed something, I don't remember what it was, a garment or something like that, made by one of the Karmapas. And the docent who was giving the tour of the museum apparently did not know who she was talking to when she was giving the Karmapa the tour and was explaining who the Karmapa was and all about what it was. And he simply looked at her and without smiling said, "I made this." I just found that a really interesting story. So His Holiness the 17th Karmapa can be, I think it's typical of the culture, not very overt in talking about, not with miracles and talking about things like the reincarnation and things like that. But every once in a while, he'll let some small thing slip like that. And it's just really interesting to see. So, all right. Let's dedicate the merit of being here today and listening to stories of these great masters and this wonderful lineage. May we follow in the examples of Gampopa and Dusum Kempa and tirelessly work to attain enlightenment. We dedicate the merit of this activity and all future virtuous activities that all beings may find ultimate relief from suffering. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.